assassinate them, and the world does nothing. The world yawns. Obama says nothing. Obama yawns. Kerry says nothing about the rape and mutilation of Christian girls in Africa. But aside from these throwbacks living in the ninth century, let's talk about in America, in this country, in these times, Easter, Passover. Does Easter still have the same meaning to you as it did? I don't know, even years ago. Forget when you were a child. I personally think holidays are for children. I kind of like them. I don't feel the shot anymore. I don't get I get nothing out of them. Nothing. No, I mean, I'm telling you the truth, nothing. I just feel anything. And I don't think children in 10 or 20 years are going to follow any of these holidays. Now, many of you will disagree with me and you say that your children will follow it. I hope you're right. I really hope you're right. How about Pelosi washing the feet of illegal aliens? I thought that was one of the most demented, disgusting abuses of the name of Jesus in my entire life. The woman has no shame. The woman has no shame. I never saw anything like this in my life. In fact, the illegal alien child whose feet were being washed by Pelosi looked at her like she was insane, saying, wait a minute, I'm an illegal alien and one of the richest women in the world is washing my feet? What's this about? It certainly can't be because she cares about my feet. I mean, that was really something. Those are some of the topics. I want to talk about other things. You know, it's Monday. And you know I'm going to talk about the ratings that just came out and how I squashed Hannity again in major markets. I have to. If I am not for myself, who will be? If I'm only for myself, who will be? If I'm not for myself, who will be? If I'm only for myself, what am I? I mean, that's how the statement goes. It's an ancient phrase, statement written by an ancient Jewish scholar, Maimonides, in the 11th or 12th century. If I am not for myself, who will be? The answer is nobody. So you have to stand up for yourself. However, if you're only for yourself, who am I? Meaning you become Harvey Weinstein or Barack Obama. And you don't want to become Harvey Weinstein or Barack Obama. I mean, certainly. At the worst, I mean, maybe you want to be Alec Baldwin. What do you want to talk about on the show today? It's Monday. I'm still on the air. What a weekend this has been. I have a new announcement to make, which is that the seats on American Airlines 757s sitting up front are the worst in the United States, the history of the United States of America. I would say that we should take the prisoners out of Gitmo and put them in first class on United and fly them around the earth a few times, refueling in air and not stop. They give up all the secrets that they may be holding back at Gitmo. There was nothing you could do in those seats to find any ergonomic satisfaction. I tried a pillow under my behind, then a pillow behind my back, a pillow in the small of my back, a neck thing behind my neck. No matter what you did, you slid off the seat. A nightmare. That's why I don't go anywhere. I mean, I did come back finally from the East Coast. It's only 6 hours. Everyone knows that. It's no big deal. I realize I'm not an astronaut, but it's one of the reasons I don't go anywhere. I mean, aside from the strip searching by gangbangers, which we're all used to now. Oh, I found the best Cuban restaurant at the best airport in America. Don't miss Gate 37 at the American Terminal in Miami for some of the best Cuban food in America. I always eat before I get on a plane, even though I'm first class. Oh, I'm going to have a first class meal. Oh, that should be good. See adults eating ice cream. I never saw anything like it, like they learn nothing. Nothing. Ice cream sundae, dear. After my steak, that should be good for my arteries. Would you like some chocolate syrup on top of that? That'll clog my arteries pretty quickly. It's like a suicide flight. It looks like the Last Supper at San Quentin. It's like, what do you want before you die? Because you know that you're going to die tomorrow. I'll have first-class food and a sundae on American Airlines. I'll have the steak slathered in butter, and then, yes, I'll have that ice cream sundae with extra hot fudge. And then I'll have that cookie. I, unfortunately, was very jealous of the person sitting next to me who had just that. I ordered the gluten-free, and the chicken looks like it spent a week in a sauna. I have never eaten anything like this in my entire life. It was inedible, and I'm a big eater. There was nothing. If they had made the plate biodegradable, I would have put ketchup on the plate and eaten it. Never saw anything like it. But the thing is, that's why I always eat at the airports before getting on a plane. I know better. You know, if you can get a water out of them, it's a big deal. Anyway, that's just neither here nor there. That's all. Not a big deal. You want to talk about the drug dealers being released? You want to talk about Nancy Pelosi washing the feet of illegals. You want to talk about me. You want to talk. I don't know. There's a lot of news. I got some big news stories I'm not ready to talk about yet. I thought of doing a segment on what I read on the trip. But that's like boring because then it leads to you asking you, you know, what books do you want me to read? I don't want you to read anything. Read what you want. So I have a list of the magazines I bought. You know, every time I travel, I revert back to being a 10-year-old child or an 11-year-old child. I buy magazines in Barnes & Noble because I can get a wide selection. And I find that I only get fun magazines. And like, when I was a kid, if I would go on a train to Pennsylvania to visit relatives, I would buy, you never believe what I bought. I'm not Guns and Ammo. I was like a hunting. How did I buy those magazines? I don't understand that. My mother would let me buy whatever I wanted for the train ride. It was only 2 hours. I always would buy magazines about guns. And I didn't even own a gun in those days. I always liked guns. There was always something amazing about guns to me. And here I am, a kid in the city. No one owned a gun except police. Only the police had guns in those days. There was a Sullivan Law, by the way. With the Sullivan Law, you went to jail for quite a long time if you were caught using a gun. And that was an interesting time. But I loved the whole idea of a firearm. I'd buy a hunting magazine, like Bow and Arrow, this, that, whatever, for the ham sandwich and white bread with the porters with the white gloves. Choo choo. But now I buy different kinds of things. Car magazines. I found a great magazine on military history that was astounding. I was reading about Napoleon's defeat at Leipzig, which was about his defeat prior to his loss at Waterloo, and it reminded me of all of the great nations that have faltered trying to conquer Russia. So if you think Obama is the first to fall in his attempts to conquer Russia, you're mistaken. Not the first, but amongst many. Let me tell you that. And without firing a shot, he's already lost. Let me tell you that as well. In a way, there's brilliance to it. I mean, I certainly don't want him to send the military up against Russia and see Americans and Russians die over Ukraine. Certainly don't want to see that. Not at all. Let the Europeans send their men. Let the French, the Germans, the Danes, the Poles send men to defend the honor of Ukraine. Ukrainians are very tough people. Very, very strong, hardy individuals. And I don't want to see a war over, but there's going to be war. There's going to be war. And then there's that issue of telling the Jews in the Ukraine to sign up and pay a tax or leave, which is a shocking story. And they're trying to blame the Russians. I'm not jumping to the conclusion that that is the truth, by the way. Ukraine's Jewish residents are looking to flee to Israel. And a Holocaust survivor has warned nothing has changed since Nazis occupied the country. And that's because Jews are being picked on again in Ukraine. But the fact of the matter is it was occurring before the Russian, let us say, invasion. And they're not invading yet. The fact of the matter is the Ukrainians were some of the most vicious anti-Semites in the last century. And you shouldn't forget that. Now suddenly they're the good guys. Now they're girls in tight pants with black, not sorry, I can't say blackberries anymore. Tahrir Square is gone. They're young girls in tight pants with iPhones in their rear pocket. Jews urged to flee Ukraine by Holocaust survivor. He said, because anti-Semitic leaflets were handed out in the country. And you should know that some of the most horrendous anti-Jewish atrocities were carried out by Ukrainians under Nazi occupation during the Second World War. And there's a huge streak of, I wouldn't say intolerance. Intolerance is one thing. Persecution is another thing. And outright murder, torture, etc. is another thing. And the fact is that these declarations made against Jewish and other minorities, mainly the Jews right now, is being blamed on the Russians, and the Russians say it is not them. They say that it's being done by the Ukrainian right wing, but you wouldn't know that listening to John Kerry. I think that's a very big story in its own way, because we don't know who is putting out the anti-Semitic leaflets. It's easy to blame Russia. I mean, that'll excite the people. Now, I don't want to go back to Harry Reid and his tie-in to the ranch, the Bundy Ranch. But there has been research done on what's underneath the grass that is allegedly at stake. It's not about grazing. It's not about cattle. It's about the land itself. And for Reid to have called Americans violent terrorists, when he stumbled on it, said violent tourists at one point, He got a little mixed up. He called them violent tourists. I think he meant violent tortoises. I think he meant to say that they were violent tortoises armed with AK-47 pea shooters. Anyway, I'll be back in a minute to take your calls right here in the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
No, I thought that I didn't. I knew I didn't want to be a nun, although we loved the nuns, and I spent a lot of time with nuns as I was growing up, a lot of time with the nuns. But I didn't think about being a congresswoman, but I didn't have any interest in running for political office.
No, I was wondering. Pelosi said her mom wanted her to be a nun, and I just wonder, would the world be a better place had she become a nun, or could she have done more damage to the Catholic Church than she's done to the body politic? These questions are very intriguing when you think about them. The feet washer, right. I mean, the feet washer is the issue. Andrew on WABC, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, first, what Hillary said, that she's brave, Pelosi's so brave, I strongly disagree. I think the Navy SEALs are brave, the NYPD, the first responders at 9/11.
We know all of that, but what's the point of your call? Of course we know that there are more brave people than Pelosi for washing dirty feet. But don't you think that was the most cynical act of a politician you've ever seen in your life?
And the irony is it is exactly the opposite of what Jesus teaches, because she was doing it to be observed by men, as the Bible says. She wasn't doing it to do good works and charity. She wants the TV cameras on her.
Yeah, it's awful. Just yeah, awful. I mean, Andrew, it's 100% true. No question about that. But the big question today is, why does Obama want to release thousands of people from prison for drug offenses? On the face of it, I would agree with it, by the way, if they were in for minor drug offenses like the use of marijuana. But we're talking about people who've had three offenses, four. Many of them are drug dealers. There's something way beyond the headline on this, and I think it's worth thinking about, because marijuana is a gateway drug. It's leading to more brain damage and the use of bigger drugs and harder drugs than you could ever imagine. Do you understand, lazy brain?
Join us.
As a member of Congress who represents hundreds of thousands of people in South Florida, I want to make sure that the right decision is arrived at, and that the president makes that decision carefully and doesn't factor politics into his decision, which I don't think he is.
What is she talking about? I have no idea. Wasserwoman Schultz, Debbie Wasserwoman Schultz, says that the midterm elections are absolutely not a referendum on Obama. So why would she say that? She knows that they're going to lose, and she's going to say it has nothing to do with Obama. It has everything to do with Obama. And Debbie Wasserwoman Schultz knows that. I mean, she knows that. Anyway, what am I going to say? The Democrat Party would be finished if we had a Republican Party that mattered. But I'm making a prediction here and now, which I told you last week. The Republicans will shoot themselves in the foot, and they're liable to lose again anyway. They're going to run milquetoast Republicans. They're going to run non-conservative politicians. They're going to run Chamber of Commerce Republicans, check pants Republicans, country club Republicans, and the conservative base will not come out and vote for them. And Debbie Wasserwoman Schultz is liable to be right, that the Democrats are liable to hold on to their terrible, terrible tenure here. Couple married 70 years, dies hours apart. I saw that story over the weekend. It really touched me. I don't know anyone married like that anymore today. There are some. This is a beautiful story. It shows Helen and Kenneth Felemly, who met as teenagers in Ohio, married for 17 years. They died 15 hours apart. So that's very touching. Helen died at age 92. Her husband, Kenneth, 91, passed away the next day. We knew when one went, the other was going to go. We wanted them to go together, and they did. You see pictures of them as teenagers, raising eight children. She was a simple woman, a homemaker. He was a railroad worker and later a mail carrier. But The reason they lived so long and stayed together, they were active in the Methodist Church where they taught Sunday school. You know, and all you wise guys, get back to me when you're 91. Tell me how your life is. I mean, it's pretty amazing to me. After 70 years of marriage, they still ate breakfast every morning holding hands. The couple never slept apart until about 3 years ago due to a medical issue. There's no jokes here. Kenneth passed away with his family by his bedside after saying, "Mom's dead." Oh, boy. The couple had 23 grandchildren and 43 great-grandchildren. It's an interesting story. I mean, it's part of an America that's gone. Helen and Kenneth Flemley met in Ohio when they were teenagers and married for 70 years, died 15 hours apart. How do you explain that? I don't know how you explain a thing like that, especially in an age where you have sluts showing their behinds on Instagram. That's what a boy is supposed to look at, a fat slob with a behind in the air. I never saw anything like a country that we're living in, that actors like Sean Penn or Alec Baldwin have daughters. They don't tell them, you know, there's shame in that. What are you posing with your leotards with your butt showing to the world? I didn't raise you to be that. Maybe they did raise them to be that way. That's where the fathers are that way. I mean, there's no father around. The father may as well be born in a test tube with a father like that. What kind of father tells a daughter, oh, yeah, go do a thing like that? Whatever. But the big story to you, I know what it is. It's the drug thing. Holder and Obama want to make more convicts eligible for clemency. There's only one reason for this. There's only one reason for this. And it's not to do with fairness. It has nothing to do with fairness. There can't be that many that are going to be released that it'll make a difference in elections. You can say, well, the obvious thing is they just want more Democrats. That's an obvious. But there aren't enough of them to swing an election. So what's the real reason that Obama wants to make more convicts eligible for clemency, for drug offenders? And do you agree or disagree with it? I mean, on the face of it, we have far too many people in prison. Let me be very clear. I've said it before. We have more prisoners per capita and proportional to our population than any country on earth, which is a damn shame. And it's a result of distorted sentencing guidelines. There's no question about that. And I don't mind people being released if they're put in jail for, let's say, smoking a joint. I mean, that's ridiculous. But the question is, who is he going to release? And how many will get out under the guise of being, let us say, innocent, more or less innocent? That's what I'm concerned about. 855-400-7282. Savage Nation, other topics out there. I mean, there's another topic out there. I don't know what you want to talk about. My horoscope, the front page of the New York Times. I actually spent the money on it for the show. Here we go again. They show a skinny girl with long hair in front of a shanty in West Virginia. 50 years later, hardship hits back. Here we go again. Caught in poverty. Appalachia's burden. That's my problem again. They show a girl living outside a shanty, playing with a dog with a shanty and a swing set. Looks like Marin County. It looks like Western Marin to me, by the way. Doesn't look much different. It really doesn't look any different than Fairfax. If you drive in the hills, it looks about the same. I don't know what they're crying about. They got a dish on the ceiling. They got food stamps. I know that. And then there's a boy at home, John, was supposed to worry about. He's 30 years old and he doesn't work. He's on disability payments for his drug addiction. You hear this? Lives on disability payments. Can you imagine that they give disability payments to drug dealers, drug addicts in our country? I never, in my life, I wouldn't believe it. They were not invented for this, developed for this. But that doesn't stop the Old York Times from going on and on with the liberal homilies. Here we go. McDowell County, the poorest in West Virginia, has been emblematic of an entrenched American poverty for more than a half century. Entrenched American poverty. See, we're supposed to worry about poverty in America again all of a sudden. All of a sudden, entrenched poverty is my problem. And then they go back to John F. Kennedy. He promised to create, the executive order created food stamps. And when President LBJ declared unconditional war on poverty, it was the squalor of Appalachia he had in mind. Nothing's changed. After trillions of dollars, they're still in poverty. How do you explain that? Figure that one out. How do you explain that after 50, 60 years of government handouts, they're still in poverty? How is that possible? Could it be the people themselves and their culture? Must you always blame it on somebody else? I was born poor. And I was told as a child, if you want to make something yourself, you're going to have to work your behind off. And you're going to have to make it on your own because I can't give it to you. So I decided. Then I was in high school. I had principals who would encourage us to work. We had a principal who would quote Shakespeare. He was an ex-pugilist. He was a tough guy, this principal. And I'll never forget hearing this. I was dozing off in assembly. I couldn't, you know, like every other kid who cared what they were speaking about. I didn't listen to it. And they give a speech. And some words come through to you no matter where your head's at. That's how you learn. You're supposed to be bored by speeches. That's normal. You're supposed to tune out. You're supposed to zone out because it's all boring. But occasionally words will come through to you which have meaning to you, and they may have a change upon your life. Well, here are the words I heard in my high school. Some men are born great. Some men achieve greatness. And some men have greatness foisted upon them. Those words resonated with me. I knew I wasn't born great. I knew that I would never have greatness foisted upon me. So I knew that if I wanted to achieve anything along the road of greatness, I'd have to do it myself. So I've been working every day of my life ever since I've been a kid to achieve something. No one gave it to me. Some men are born great. What does that mean? That's the old system. That's the old system, or let us say the father is a billionaire and the son is reasonably intelligent and he gives the son the empire. Then the son is a great man until he proves otherwise. For example, Soros, the money changer in the temple, has a dumb son, a moron. You look at the kid, you know he's a dummy. You know that if he didn't have the father's money, he'd be working. I don't want to denigrate anyone who has a menial job. Don't get me wrong. But whatever, pick your most menial job. That's the son of Soros. Yet he's a great man because he has all the money and people kiss his ring. So if he has greatness now, we don't know where this will end up after daddy dies and there's no longer any advice. And then others, you know, have greatness foisted upon them. For example, Obama has had greatness foisted upon him. He was cast into the role of the presidency by forces well beyond our imagination. Forces well beyond their imagination rigged the whole system, greased the skids, took an unknown lazy senator and virtually made him into president by rigging the election and running a schmoo against him, picking a schmoo to run against him. That's how that happened. And they threw the election for this guy. Well, the rest is history. Anyway, so I say you learn on your own way. What it is you wanna do? Okay, so what do you wanna do? You wanna talk about the drug deals? Most of my calls are now about the convicts eligible for presidential clemency. That's the majority of calls I'm getting. Is that one? Let's go to WJR in Detroit, Jim, on the question of clemency for drug dealers. What do you think? I mean, drug users. What do you think?
Well, maybe it's possible that they need people that are experienced with drugs to help push all the dope for legalizing. I mean, someone's got to run the show once it becomes legal in all 50 states like they're pushing for.
Yeah, you make a good point. In other words, he can get it. Maybe Obama will create a new, instead of drug, anti-drug program, he can convert the DEA instead of the Drug Enforcement Administration. He could change it to the Drug Distribution Administration, the DDA.
Yeah.
And then you could say they could hire the ex-convicts as workers.
Yeah, they run.
No, I see your point. Just switch the DEA to the DDA, the Drug Distribution Administration. And then you have the new America under Obama Holder. The transformation will be complete with all the potheads who know nothing running around. WABC Zoran on the Ukraine issue. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
I'd like to comment the situation that it's been a couple months already that this new thugs in Kiev basically came to the power. We have a chief rabbi of Kiev urging people to leave Ukraine. We have situation that they tried to burn down the synagogue. The new government, they put five ministry positions to the right-wing sector who are openly anti-Jews.
You're saying that the anti-Semitism that is being seen in Ukraine is not emanating from Russia or Russians, but it's emanating from Ukrainians themselves. Is that correct?
That's really correct. But guess what? There is this little fire that was distributed by three unknown men in front of the synagogue in eastern Ukraine and carried the ketchup, already picked it up in a matter of hours.
Yes, Kerry Ketchup already said it was the Russians who did it, correct?
and distributing the flyer who are urging Jews to register or what. But it's been 2 months. He didn't see any of these signs on the Western.
No, no, I understand. In fact, the Russians have almost forensically proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the flyers which hijacked and counterfeited some Russian insignia was a fake. I hear you on that, Zoran. Look, this issue is not that important to most Americans. It's an important issue to me because I can see the handwriting on the wall already of what's happening. And my headline for the article on Jews urged to flee Ukraine by Holocaust survivor, my headline is Ukrainian Nazis try to blame Russians. That's how I see it. That doesn't mean all Ukrainians are Nazis. Don't misquote me. Any more than all Americans who voted for Obama are communists. Just about 99% of them are, because they want somebody else's money, and they want somebody else to work for them. But, you know, let's be realistic about it. There's always been a strong streak of Nazism in the Ukraine. They were very happy with Hitler. That doesn't mean all Ukrainians are that way. In fact, the opposite is true. But it's not our business in either case, by the way. 855-400. I don't even want to talk about this, by the way. Can we stop with Ukraine? It's too far away from us. I don't think people care that much. I think that the bigger issues today in America would be domestic issues. And I believe that Obama wanting clemency for thousands of drug offenders is a far more important story. By no means is it the only story. I was reading a book over the weekend on the airplane about Cuba and how the mob owned Cuba and then lost it to the revolution. I had found the book years ago and then took it on the plane with me because I was going to be in Florida. And it's called Havana Nocturne. It's pretty good. It's a little left-wingish, too much for me, a little too sympathetic for Fidel Castro, for my taste, by the way, a little distortion. But the fact of the matter is, the book is quite interesting in so many different ways, how the mob owned Cuba and then lost it to the revolution. And there's a lot of social commentary in here that is worth talking about on the show today because some of the undertones of what went on in Cuba are going on in our country today. We have many similar elements. We have a corrupt government. We have a corrupt government in cahoots with, let us say, how shall I put it in a nice way, questionable individuals. And then we have an underclass in the country that is ready for revolution, that is constantly being stimulated by the left wing in this country, the occupiers, who talk about direct action. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE.
First of all, that was the right thing to do to try to, you know, simmer things down. Remember, this is the 19th anniversary of the Oklahoma bombing. So this notion that Mr. Bundy has no recourse but violence is absolute anti-government violence is absolutely wrong.
So the loudmouth vice chairwoman of the Democrat National Committee, Donna Brazil, whatever, likens Cliven Bundy to Timothy McVeigh. That tells you that this illegitimate government of ours is getting ready to conduct a purge of, I would have to say, the Patriot Movement. I don't know how else to put it. My suspicion is that this illegitimate operation called the Obama administration, by the rhetoric coming out of the mouths of some of these most vile people, tells me they're getting ready to move on them. And if you think it can't happen here, you're mistaken. It is happening here. It is happening here. Obama's like the Loch Ness Monster. And as you well know, the Loch Ness Monster doesn't always show his head. It's under the surface. 855-407-282. If that didn't get your attention, nothing will. But that's my job, is to provoke you into anger, laughter, happiness, hunger, want, lust, envy, and greed. If I can't do that, I don't belong in this business.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400.
So, I'm here to tell you about an amazing new acne treatment that even Proactiv says is better than Proactiv.
Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
New Monday, how are you? New Monday. Got to work, like a slave,
like a slave all day.
Here come Tuesday.
It is Blue Monday on The Savage Nation. I really am glad you're with me, helping make waves across the nation. It was a long weekend, came back from the East Coast, used Sunday as my day of rest, tried not to get crucified out in the streets. So we're talking about Obama suddenly announces he wants to release the free the prisons like the Bastille of drug offenders. Now, you say on the face of it, okay, there's too many people in prison to begin with. How many of them are there on small minor drug charge? But it's a question of why. There can't be that many to, you know, alter elections. There's always a nefarious reason when Obama and Holder do something. It's never straight up. And you can't call me on it, because there's nothing that you could say that we're not going to say already. You know what I really want to do? I want to talk about the worst seats in America, in American history on the airline. The American Airlines first class seats are the worst in history. A pillow under my behind, a pillow on my back, a pillow on my neck. Didn't you slide off the seat anyway? There's nothing you can do, nothing, impossible. And I'm the kind of guy can't sit for long to begin with. So I get up and I try to walk around. They look at you like you're committing a crime, like you're crazy. I'm just getting up and walking forward already. They, you know, I say, where's the sky marshal? Then I walk to the back of the thing. You can't walk there. They look at you like you're a criminal or a terrorist. You don't know what to do on an airplane. I can see why people go crazy. I don't like flying for that reason, the confinement. So I bring magazines, as I said to you. I'm like a child. I go to Barnes & Noble. So here's the magazines I bought. The Quarterly Journal of Military History, How a Coalition Army Beat Napoleon in His Own Game. That was like the high-class magazine. But it's fascinating to read military history. Just fascinating. I didn't really know this, the thing I'm going to tell you now. One of the articles was about America taking Texas from the Mexicans. I knew there was, you know, it's called The American Fandango in Monterrey. His expansionist appetite whetted by the 1845 annexation of Texas. U.S. President James K. Polk sought war with Mexico to force more territorial concessions. And when I read the article, I said, you know, this is very much like Putin when you think about it. His expansionist appetite, whetted by the 1845 annexation of Texas, U.S. President James Polk sought war with Mexico to force more territorial concessions. It's very much like what Putin's doing. He's sort of provoking war with Ukraine to force more territorial concessions, because he just got, I hear that Putin just got New York. I hear Obama just gave Putin New York as part of the deal to make sure there's no further problems. So in New York, they're going to have to start teaching Russian in the high schools now. American forces received the hot reception in the well-fortified, well-armed streets of Monterrey. And the whole story of it. Zachary Taylor directed frontal assaults and house-to-house fighting that were costly, but convinced the Mexicans under Major General Pedro de Ampudia to quit. House-to-house fighting sounds like Los Angeles to me. In some, the hard fight. No, anyway, it's filled with illustrations. That's one magazine I bought. Then, not to be seen as too high class a guy, I bought thoroughbred and classic cars, and the front picture was of two red Ferraris, a Ferrari 308 and a 328. How owning a last Maranello beauty is easier than you'd think, and they're rather not that costly, by the way, compared to other Ferraris. It's like an entry-level used Ferrari. I think you'll buy it for $35,000. Attracted by the look, well, we reveal how the 308, 328 can be painless to own, too. And it says it can be found for under £50,000, $75,000. That's interesting. So if you want to talk to Guido on a regular basis at the Ferrari dealer, you're all set. Then I like to look at used prices for like my 1970 Jag XKE, how much that would be worth. But it's such a difference in one car or the other. Next, I bought classic and sports cars, Maserati at 100. Okay, so I called each of these magazines a one-hour magazine. Since six-hour flyer. So the military magazine was a one-hour magazine because I get bored. The classic cars, that's a one-hour magazine. I then bought Ships Monthly, and it's about old cruise ships and what happens to them with pictures. That's a one-hour magazine. Then I bought Plane and Pilot because I'm a sort of a guy who wished that I could fly, but I can't. I always wanted to fly jets on aircraft carriers when I was a kid. Somehow, I never got around to it, but to me, they're my heroes. The guys who fly jets onto the decks of aircraft carriers have always been my heroes. When we went aboard the Stennis, the aircraft carrier, and I watched these young men flying F-A-18s at night, and I watched these rockets take off in the middle of the night and land, all you see is a red flame shooting out of the back of a plane. These kids are flying 80, 100 million, I don't know what they cost, certainly more than a Jaguar. But it's amazing to see these things fly, what skill and daring and brains it takes. And so I read Flying Magazine, and I read Plane and Pilot, Flying Magazine. That's a one-hour magazine. Then finally, there is the Classic and Sports Car Magazine, which has so many pages and pictures, that's a two-hour magazine. So by that time, you're ready for the chicken, which tastes like it was cooked in a sauna, at which point you pass out, you wake up, and then I have a Home and Land magazine from the area of Florida in which I was in. I always look at housing prices and condos. Do you read housing magazines, like these color magazines of housing prices? No, when you get older, you do. See, I have Skype now in my studio, so the older guy is shaking his head saying yes, the younger guy is saying thumbs down. Pedro's saying, what, are you crazy? I don't look at housing magazines. He said, I look at Playboy. He doesn't look at housing magazines. He doesn't look at housing magazines. Hey, now he's clapping. Now he's happy. So I'm looking at a crazy story now, before we get back to the serious business of the day. Man drowns in swan attack. Wife files wrongful death lawsuit. What, is she going to sue the swan? No. The wife of a man who was attacked by a swan and died is now filing a wrongful death lawsuit. According to WGN-TV, Anthony Hensley was responsible for two swans in an Illinois condo complex. They were used to keep away geese. Did you know that swans and geese didn't get along? To me, a swan and a goose is the same thing. I'm not that into ornithology. Crips and the Bloods, Eric said. The swans and the geese. The Democrats and the Republicans. The Tories and the anti-Tories. Pasta and antipasta. The report states Hensley drowned 2 years ago when one of the swans knocked him off his kayak and attacked him as he tried to swim to shore. Hensley's wife is now suing her husband's employer and the condo complex. She said they should have known swans are territorial and attack. Oh, God. Where'd she get this lawyer from? It had to be Columbia or NYU. It had to be from NYU. There's no other place they could have found a lawyer to take on this lawsuit. It was like suing God. A swan knocked him into the water and then attacked him? Yeah, well, all right, there are. I mean, geese are very big. You know, they use geese as attack animals in Germany? Oh, yeah, originally, I remember reading there was an animal behaviorist when I was growing up and going to college, and he used geese as his subjects. He did not write After Many a Summer Dies the Swan. That was Aldous Huxley. But I learned that geese are used as watch animals on properties. A goose can attack you, and if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. That's what I always say. That's my motto. If it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. So the gander's the man, right? And the goose is the girl? Or are both of them geese? I don't know what a gander is. What's the gander on that one? What's the gander on the goose? What would you like to talk about? Shrimp Boy? Shrimp Boy. Did you hear what Willie Brown, the ex-mayor of San Francisco, the former Speaker of the Assembly, had to say? He wrote an article defending Shrimp Boy. I couldn't believe my eyes. I could not believe my eyes that he would stick himself into this thing, saying we should go easy on Shrimp Boy. After all, he was only trying to bring in some rocket-propelled grenades, and he really didn't do anything wrong. I just couldn't believe that. Here's another article. SF spending on homeless exceeds many departments' budgets. According to the San Francisco website, take a guess what San Francisco spends on these bums. $458,000 per day to house and help homeless bums. That's $34 a day per homeless bum, whether they're on the streets, in a shelter, or in supportive housing. The annual $167 million price tag is $20 million more than the operations budget for the Children, Youth, and Family Services Department. And then they go on with that. I couldn't believe this. $458,000, $500,000 a day for bums? And the streets are full of them. The streets are full of them. And the homeless population has stayed pretty much steady at about 7,000 for the past 10 years. It's a racket. Homelessness is a business to many people. You don't know that. And there is a way to get them off the streets, incidentally, which is you build homeless encampments, and you put them in the encampment, and you rehabilitate them in the encampments, and you teach them to work. And no workie, no foodie. No workie, no foodie. No workie, no foodie. You're not getting anything for nothing. You're not going to sit in the streets and urinate and defecate in the streets and get paid. Not if I ran the city. But that's one man's opinion. If you care to comment on that, don't call me. Call your uncle. Call your uncle in Duluth and tell him what you think about that. I know what you want to call about, which is about the release of the people in prison. It's a big story. What's this Game of Thrones recap? I watched the show two or three times. I can't stand it. I don't go for fake historical dramas that like with stilted dialogue and they speak like a language, an extinct language. You think you're an intellectual for watching Game of Thrones? People are only watching it for the sex scenes at the end of the day. The only reason they watch Game of Thrones is to see women raped, young women raped, and people disemboweled. It's one of the, it's boring. What's with the dwarf in the prison on the straw? I don't get it. That's like the sympathy, but basically it's porno. It's softcore porno. Nobody called me on the big topic of the day, the Easter Passover question. Pedro, will you look for an Easter Passover caller? Do we have one? I said, does anyone think that in 5 or 10 years, no one's calling on that? Children will still celebrate these holidays? I mean, what's Easter today to most kids? It's a chocolate egg, a chocolate bunny, right? And apparently you have to corner the market on that a long time ago. So let's take some callers on the Savage Nation. WFTL, Al, in Fort Lauderdale, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, it's Fort Walton Beach. I just wanted to say that for every prisoner that Obama releases, there are going to be many brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, moms, dads, you know, even children in many cases, who will go into a voting booth and pull a lever based on that, what is a something of a justice handout from this president.
Well, wait a minute. But they all would vote Democrat anyway. What you're saying is this will motivate them to vote?
Exactly. Exactly.
No, you're right. In other words, they're not going to be motivated to vote in this election, but in this case, they may be.
Done worse under Obama than the black population of the United States in terms of ethnic groups. Blacks have suffered much worse under this guy than any other group. You know, so those people are, to a large extent, unmotivated to vote in this next election. And nothing's going to do more to get those people into the voter booth than some type of a handout from this administration that targets them as a group. It doesn't have to be 100%.
Okay, that's politics. Thank you. You're right, but I already phased out on it. My eyes jumped to another story that I couldn't believe. Man may be first to father child with reconstructed penis. As he was talking to me about Obama, my mind went to this story. Mike Moore spent most of his life feeling different. After a botched circumcision at age 7 resulted in an infection and forced doctors to amputate almost the entire penis. But now at 30, he's reveling in the joy of an accomplishment that is fairly ordinary for someone his age, but almost completely unheard of for men for a situation. He fathered a child naturally. After a Stanford plastic surgeon gave him a new appendage 7 years ago, Moore went on to become perhaps the first man in the U.S. to conceive a child with a reconstructed penis. Now, I don't know why my eye was attracted to this story, but that's a miracle, isn't it? Huh? Eric, would you say that's a miracle, having a child with a reconstructed penis? He's laughing. The medical eye-opener came full circle this month when Moore and his wife traveled to Palo Alto from Mississippi. You mean there's not enough children in the world? I mean, he had to have a penis reconstructed to have a child. There's a shortage, I guess, of children. All right, whatever, to each his own. Everyone's entitled. I'll be back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7.
We we're talking about the news of the day, Obama wanting to release drug offenders. The last story is, you know, a weird story. A man had a penis destroyed through circumcision. At age 7, he always wanted to have a child, and he had a penis made for him at Palo Alto. I can't follow the story, but all right, God bless him. Now he has a child of his own. But the story of how the penis was eventually made by the doctor, it's a miracle of surgery. The first phalloplasty was performed in 1936 using abdominal tissue and rib cartilage. Guys, don't laugh in there. I mean, just think if it happened to you. Young man, please put your thingy in here. No, it's terrible. Then this Dr. Lee entered the field. Penile reconstruction relied on forearm tissue. Gives it a new meaning. And he said, though fairly successful, the technique of using forearm tissue has limitations. It leaves large scars and the skin colors don't match. And the operations don't always work. So then they went to arm tissue. So he thought there must be a better way to do it. So he looked at a nearer candidate, tissue on the upper thigh. Not only was it stronger and thicker, but it also could be cut away, rolled, and shaped into what is known as a neophallus, with a temporary catheter at the center and looped under the skin of the groin while still attached to the body. Dr. Lee practiced on cadavers and eventually streamlined the technique that could be done in one stage. In 2005, he operated on a 63-year-old man who had lost his penis to cancer. And now look where we are today. There's hope for the San Francisco Fire Department in case there's an accident, is what I'm saying. And neophalluses cannot be, I don't want to read anymore. Oh, they still have to use a pump. But Moore's thigh tissue was strong enough for penetration. Look at what medical advancements are being used for. Well, why not? I mean, if they separate twins that are attached, those horrendously attached poor babies, you know, why not? Why shouldn't the man be able to have this done? I mean, it's a horrible curse. Nobody would talk about a thing like that in my day. Look at this, what they could do. A neophallus, just think. It gives a whole new meaning to... I tell you, the penis story is attracting more attention than anything. It's more interesting than Obama, to be honest with you. I mean, why deal with a neo-Marxist when you could talk about a neo-phallus? And so I think people are calling about the phalloplasty surgery in California. The man fathered a child. Botched circumcision at age 7 resulted in an infection and forced doctors to amputate his entire you-know-what. Now he has a new one. It's amazing. You could laugh at it and make jokes, and that's good. That's okay. It would be human not to. It would be human not to. I mean, a human to make jokes. That's what I meant. Because everyone's going to laugh at this. But the fact of the matter is, it's miraculous. You know, I mean, if God made Eve out of a rib, why can't you make a penis out of thigh tissue? Think about it. And think about what I'm saying. I mean, this is as close to God's creation of Eve as possible. Is that if God could make Eve out of a rib, Adam's rib, that's what the Bible says, so why shouldn't it be possible? Well, it is possible. Dr. Lee has developed this methodology using tissue from his thigh. I know you're saying, why is he going on? I find it fascinating. I mean, it's a congratulatory story. The question is circumcision, by the way. This brings up the circumcision issue is what it brings up again. It was a machine that circumcised him? That's how it happened? A machine? I don't believe that. Have you ever heard of a machine performing circumcisions? My call screener was shaking his head no, and the young call screener ran out screaming. He ran out of the room. No, this story unto itself creates all sorts of nervousness in men to begin with, because the whole issue of castration anxiety comes up. If you've read Freud, you know what I mean by castration anxiety. It's why big cars are sold. That's why SUVs are still sold in some quarters of America. You ever see guys in these huge cars? I mean, yes, you know, what does he need that car for? I saw cars, where was I? In Florida? I have never seen anything like it. SUVs with these monster steel things in the front that you can push cars with. You know what I'm saying? These large bumpers that stick off the bumpers? I said, boy, this guy really has problems, I got to tell you. What does he buy that for? What does he need that for? Don't you dare mess with me. I come out of the pizza place, I kill you, you know. I run you over with my bumper. All right, let's take some calls and stop kidding around here. You notice I haven't used the word Constitution once or George Washington. I'm not going to do it. I won't do it. I'm not going to bore you. The day I start boring you is the day I leave radio. Because if I bore you, I bore me, I go to sleep, my narcolepsy will start kicking in. I think half the people on radio have narcolepsy, only they don't know it. The listeners know it. I'm not going to do it. I just won't talk about George Washington, no matter what you say. I'd rather talk about neophalluses and phalloplasty. All the word neo means new. New phallus. Everyone knows what a phallus is. There's been phallic worship since ancient times. I think that's, okay, no bad jokes now. I mean, I'm not standing on it. I could have done a whole sequence of funny jokes just now if I were on the stage at the Sands in Las Vegas, but I was going to do a jump just now that would end 3 minutes from now with no career. But you would have laughed your head off, I can guarantee you. Jim on KBET in Las Vegas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, your screener was too young to remember the story, but he's sure that you would remember John Wayne Bobbitt.
Oh, yeah, Bobbitt. Bobbitt's girlfriend cut off his you-know-what.
His wife cut his penis off and threw it out the car window. And they retrieved it and it reattached it. Well, that brings the story to mind. My son was a corrections officer here in Vegas, and John Wayne ran into trouble, and he was in the jail. So my 65th birthday was coming, and my son had John Wayne sign an autograph to me for my 65th birthday and let him get out of jail a couple days early.
So you have an autograph from John Wayne Bobbitt?
Yes.
Okay. I was afraid you were going to say something a little dirty at the end, but...
No, it was for my 65th birthday.
But, I mean, you treasure that? Do you treasure that autograph?
To me for...
Wait. Jim, you treasure the autograph of John Wayne Bobbitt?
Yes.
Why?
Because it was my 65th birthday, and my son was...
Oh, you mean because of connection.
Officer.
Would you pay more for an autograph of Michael Savage or John Wayne Bobbitt?
Well,
at least I got a chuckle out of you. No, I don't understand what people collect things for. I don't understand. I knew a rich man when I was younger and struggling. I was trying to get grants from him to do research. He paid $35,000 at an auction for Marilyn Monroe's brassiere. And she had been dead for 50 years. I don't understand that. What would he do, mount it on a coffee table under glass? And as people having a drink, that's Marilyn Monroe's brassiere. I don't understand why people collect these things. How much would my hat be worth with, like, some dandruff in it? I don't know. I don't know what people buy things for. I could see certain items I own, I could see people wanting to buy, like the manuscript for a book or my Bible with 400 different Post-its in it. That might have value to someone years from now. But I don't get it, what people buy from people, you know, what they'll pay for. How about Easter? That's a good caller. I asked an interesting question. I didn't get many calls on it. Because it's like it's petering out across the country. Passover, Easter. You know, when you're young, you go. If you're Jewish, you go to a Seder, which is a symbolic Last Supper for Christian people. You don't know that, but Jesus' Last Supper was a Seder. Isn't it? I mean, you're a preacher, right? Yes. He went to a Seder, and that's where Judas did the thing to him. It was at a Seder. I mean, he was a Jewish guy. He was a rabbi. Went to a Seder. They did the whole thing. The matzah, the thing, the up, the boom. And during it, they turned him in behind his back. What? He was betrayed. He was betrayed at a Seder. Which leads to the whole question of thousands of years later, how could you sit? I don't understand how Jewish people can make an entire thing about being a slave in Egypt. This is the part that bothers me. I would modify the Seder to talk about slavery today in the Sudan, Christian slaves of Muslims. I wouldn't talk about Pharaoh. I'd talk about the psychotics who are enslaving Christians around the world. What are you talking about Pharaoh for? Why? Because it's politically safe. Let mine people go. Go. Let mine people go. You know, like, okay, fine. How about the people who are being enslaved today? That's what you should be worried about. But it's safe to talk about Pharaoh and the mortar and the symbolism of the this and the that. Wonderful. But what about the slaves today? Warriors ditch piers 30 to 32 for Mission Bay Arena site. Oh, that's a local, just what San Francisco needs is another stadium. We don't have enough traffic. Another stadium we need. I once visited the big battleship Missouri on Pier 30 to 32. The battleship Missouri. That's a nice pier. So I visited some wonderful ships during Fleet Week, canceled by Obama over the years, in order to make sure that Michelle could fly to China on the money that he saved, so she could be frugal enough to eat French fries when she splurges. Let's go to the callers. Sue on WABC in New York. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Nice to talk to you. I'm calling about the Easter.
Yes. What's your opinion on Easter? Will it survive 20 more years?
I think it's going to survive forever. Yesterday, we had 42 people here, 25 kids, the rest adults. We all went to church. Then we had dinner. We had egg hunts. We had egg tosses, hula hoop contests. The kids loved it, and I think the tradition will continue on.
Well, I hope so. I mean, even though it's sort of divorced from a religious context, it has a cultural context, I think, is what you're saying, right? Is it time for families to get together?
Everybody went to church first, so.
Oh, so you come from an observant family. Well, that's what keeps people together. Remember the old phrase in the 70s, those who pray together, stay together? Remember that?
I absolutely do.
Those who pray together, stay together. It's a very beautiful statement. I wish we saw more of it. Unfortunately, Nancy Reagan's not in the White House anymore, even though it wasn't her statement. It was sort of associated with that era of American government. The Obama administration, I would think, would change it from those who pray together, stay together, to something different. I'll have to think about it. I don't want to say something flippant and regret it. Let's see. Those who pray together get listened to by the NSA, but it doesn't rhyme. There's no iambic pentameter to it. Those who pray together, I don't know. It's a different world. This is the least... They what? Oh! Wait, I got it. Those who pray together... Today, the Obama phrase would be, those who pray together, stray together. That would be the motto of the Obama administration. She goes on one airplane to Martha's Vineyard, he goes on another. Then they send a dog on an Osprey helicopter. What's that about? Have you ever heard of a first couple that doesn't travel together? Hello? Let's not talk about that in too much detail. Let's move on. Let us move on. Thank God there's no horror to talk about with the Boston Marathon. American male wins Boston Marathon for first time since 1983, while women's winner retains title. Duh. I am so not interested in marathons. Does anyone care about a marathon? There are so many of them. How do you keep up with them? A half marathon, a quarter marathon, a full marathon, a marathon and a half. A this marathon, a that marathon. Everyone has a button, a bow, a rainbow, a this, a that, a pink thing, a yellow ribbon, a pink ribbon, a nose ring, a head ring, an earring, an eye ring. Irene, your ring. I don't care about marathons. You look at the original marathon in Greece. Marathon. We used to run naked across. They ran the whole thing naked so the old rich guys could. I mean, a lot of these sports are tied into ancient times when they were done strictly for other reasons. Meb Keflezighi has become the first American male to win the Boston Marathon since 1983. All right, good. And what is that going to do for me? I don't get it. I'm supposed to celebrate that Meb won? Oh, we beat Kenya. Oh, I'm going to sleep better tonight. I am going to sleep so much better tonight than an American won the Boston Marathon. Now I can finally have a nice night's sleep without any nightmares. 16-year-old California runaway survives flight to Hawaii in wheel well. I don't get that one. It's almost physically impossible for a kid to... How does anyone sleep in a wheel well? I guarantee you had a better night's sleep than I did. He passed out from a lack of oxygen. He probably had a good night's sleep. Don't you think about it? I mean, maybe there's some medical miracle involved here. The stowaway survived the Pacific flight from San Jose to Honolulu inside the wheel well of a jet? He probably had more oxygen in that wheel well than they do in the passenger compartment of Hawaiian Airlines. Well, at least he got there. Remember that Hawaiian Airlines plane that blew up, that piece blew out in the middle of the sky? Like a number of seats disappeared with everyone in them? Unbelievable. Lost Monday to explain how a 60-year-old boy from Santa Clara managed to scale a fence at Mineta San Jose International Airport, surviving a fiber flight to Maui in the wheel well of a Hawaiian jet. I don't know how you survived that. There's no oxygen there. I guarantee the food he had was better than what I had in American in first class. It sounds to me like his seat was more comfortable than mine was. At least he slept the whole way. I couldn't sleep for a minute. How does he sleep? Well, because he passed out probably from a lack of O2, right? Traveling at 37,000 feet with temperatures of 40 to 50 degrees below zero? How? And it's not pressurized. How does this explain this? Is there a doctor in the house? Some experts theorize that because of the unforgiving condition, the boy's body went into a state of hibernation, remaining unconscious until the plane reached a lower altitude. No, it is a medical miracle. They say it's akin to those who fall into frozen rivers and survive. Pilot and aviation consultant John Nance said the incident is one of three things: a hoax, a miracle, or we're going to have to rewrite the textbooks if he actually did what he says he did. He needs to be studied very carefully by medical science because this is not supposed to be possible. You see that? See, that's what I'm saying. It's almost impossible. Even if people survived the high-altitude flight, they could freeze to death or fall to the ground once the landing gear is lowered for landing. So is this really a true story? You're going to fly without oxygen at 50 degrees below zero for 5 hours? I don't know. I don't know. There's so many hoaxes out there. I don't know what this is. Even if he's stupid, let's say he's an idiot. Let's say he's a typical Democrat and he has no brain. How could he survive this? Even as a low-information flyer, how is it possible for him to have... He scaled an airport perimeter fence line. How's that for Homeland Security? Attention. Let's start with the first part of the story. He scaled an airport perimeter fence line. How's that for the TSA the next time they strip your grandmother down in a wheelchair? I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855.
The sea of love.
I want to tell you how much
it is. 54 minutes after the hour, you're listening to the one and only Savage Nation. Smashing the competition into the stone. No, people don't like me to boast. I can't boast about it, but can I give you the facts? Would that work for you? Does it work for you if I just simply give you the facts? I got this last night. I've been saving it all day. It says your final update is reflective of March. You've smashed Hannity. You smashed Hannity. Washington, D.C., a 3 share to a 0.9 share. Detroit on WJR, 2.5 share to his 0.8 share. Seattle, 0.6 to a 0.1. I mean, this is amazing stuff. Markets winning by share. WABC in New York, 1.1 share versus his 0.5 on the station, the letter deficient station. I mean, that's a head-to-head thing. 250,000-watt station at the same time, and I'm beating him by double. Chicago, 1.2 versus a 0.2. Can you believe this on WLS? San Francisco, KDW, I got a 1.5 share. He's got a 0.1. That's 15 times bigger than his. Okay? I'm on KSFO, right? I'm joking, of course. Dallas, 1.1 to his 0.3. So, look, you can listen to whoever you want. The numbers don't lie. I want to thank all of you for listening and talking about my show. It means a lot to me. You know what I'm saying? In other words, look, it's my last place in radio. I'm not going anywhere after this. This is it. So I want to thank you for being the angels that you are, for listening to the Savage Nation, supporting the show on a daily basis, and I guess telling your friends about it. It was a brand new beginning for me in January. Can you imagine starting all over again? I wasn't born yesterday either. But I had like a cat has seven lives. That was my ninth life. That was my ninth life. Give me 15 minutes and I'll give you America right here on your local station.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855.
Naturally. So, ha-ha, but it's an amazing story and it touches on all of our most primal fears. Right? You know, you don't have to tell jokes about it. Can it really happen? Okay, let's go to Idaho. KBOI in Idaho. David, you're on the Savage Nation. What's your topic?
Dr. Savage, machines have commonly been used for circumcisions. Electrocautery machines. These machines cut as well as cauterize the skin simultaneously.
What, so they put a baby into a machine for circumcision?
No, not at all. It's like a pen knife. The tip of that instrument just simply directs the electrical current that is dialed up to whatever.
Okay.
The doctor.
All right. So it's like a laser beam focused on the foreskin. But how did this boy have an infection as a result? What do you think? You're a lawyer who deals in these cases.
Well, in the 1980s, I represented an insurance company and the doctor that performed a surgery in which the doctor negligently dialed it up too much on a young boy, and as a result, the genitals were so damaged that the penis had to be removed. And in that case, the doctors, in conjunction with the parents, decided to have a sex change operation.
Oh, come on. That's horrible.
Of course it was horrible.
That's horrible. You mean nobody monitored where they calibrated this circumcision instrument? There's like, okay, it should end right there. No, the doctor went out for lunch?
No, I wasn't the lead attorney on that case, so I don't remember why it occurred, but,
That's so frightening.
From the end result, it was...
Holy God. So they do use such instruments for circumcision.
Yes. If you do a web search for electrocautery, C-A-U-T-E-R-Y, you'll see the instrument.
I'll never sleep again. it'll be the end of my sleep, and all of my circadian rhythms will be destroyed from it. So this is about a neophallus, phalloplasty. I mean, this is an amazing medical miracle, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's truly an amazing thing but it leads you to ask a question. I think this is the question that's pregnant in this discussion. If a man loses almost his entire penis at 7, and a surgeon develops a method to add, let's say, give him back a penis, right? Does this not mean that a man can have his penis augmented in length and girth?
Oh, I would assume so.
Oh, my God. Now we're going to start to go down the road of the Kardashians. So where does this end? I mean, if women are getting, breast implants for God knows how many decades now, and we know many men don't like that anymore. They find it kind of repugnant, this plastic woman thing. But if they start applying such phalloplasty to men who want to augment their manhood, so to speak, where does this end? At what point do you say enough is enough?
Well, maybe the future bragging rights will be, mine can be bigger than yours.
Oh, God. I don't know, but it does open up some real deep scars in the minds of most most people. Oh, come on, Eric, stop it. Don't do that to me. I have a call screen. They had to put Skype in. I love Skype where I could see the guys, and they had to hold up a banana just now. Really, come on, Eric, I know you're having lunch. Have a heart. Don't do that to me. They're playing with my head right now. They really did, I swear to God. But all right, it's good to have fun on radio because this is going to be a long schlep. It's like a long day's journey into night. This is like a long schlep into the afternoon here if it's not. There's no stories. Thank God there was no bombing in Boston, right? What's this? Pen-wielding defendant shot dead in federal court over an assault pen? They're getting crazy. Man dies after being shot at federal courthouse. A defendant died after being shot by U.S. Marshal on Monday during an attack on a witness during a trial in a new federal courthouse in Salt Lake City, the FBI said. Ciale Angiolau died after hospital. He was shot in the chest. They rushed the witness with a pen in an aggressive, threatening manner. Angiolau was shot several times in front of a jury that had been selected on Friday. Ooh. Angiolau was one of 17 people named in a 29-count racketeering indictment filed in 2010 accusing Tongan Crip Gang members of assault, conspiracy, robbery, and weapons. Let me tell you something. You got a big man with a pen, he can kill you. Am I right? If a woman can kill a man with a high heel, why couldn't a 250-pound inmate kill you with a pen? So don't blame the marshal for this. This guy was a big guy. Tattooed neck, that doesn't mean anything unto itself, but it, you know what I'm saying? Ciali Angulo, a marshal shot and critically wounded Angulo on the new federal court. He attacked a witness on the witness stand with a pen? I didn't know there's such a thing as a Tongan Crip gang. I spent years in Tonga. I met the king. 275, 280, 300-pound man. I sat and had tea with him, the king of Tonga, when the original king of Tonga, when I was doing ethnobotanical research. This was a, he used to surf. That's a big sport. Great people, the Tonga people. You know, there's a whole story, an anthropological story of why the Tonga people are so large, meaning how did they evolve into such large people. It's an interesting story that I remember reading when I was, not all Tongans are large, but by and large, they're very big people, right? You know that. If you live in the Bay Area, you know some Tongan folk. But I lived in Tonga. These are some of the biggest people on the planet. And as I understood it as an anthropologist at the time, the Tongan people are great seafaring people, great voyagers on the open sea. And through natural selection, the larger the person with more body mass, the higher their chances for survival were. And so there was a natural selection for the larger the person, the more survival, more reproduction of those individuals. And so the bigger survived. The smallest didn't survive in those long sea voyages. That makes perfectly good sense to me. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
It is 23 minutes after the hour on the Savage Nation. How do I do it? No jet lag at my age, nothing. Nothing affects me. Nothing. People 30 years younger than me. There's a big story out there that I talked about. Parents and kids don't want first lady at high school graduation. Michelle is trying to nose her way into a high school graduation in Topeka, Kansas. And it's not that they don't like her. It's not about her, though. And she's trying to use this for political gain, tying it into the 60th anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Brown versus Board of Education. And the kids said, wait a minute, this is the biggest day of our life. They've taken the glory and shine away from the children and put it on Michelle Obama. And one student who started the petition, one child started this petition. Her name is Taylor Gifford, age 18. She's listening to the show. We did not call her. She called us. Taylor, you're on the Savage Nation from Kansas City. Taylor, what motivated you to start the online petition to reconsider its plans?
You know, it's the fact that I am the oldest of eight, and they told us that we were not allowed to have all of the family there. We could only have, you know, bring four people into the building.
Now, did they limit the number of seats after they announced Michelle Obama would be the speaker?
Yes.
Oh, so why are they taking away the seats? For who? For security or for who?
From what I've heard, they needed at least 1,000 seats just for security, like taken away just for security.
1,000 seats for security?
Yes.
That's astounding. What's the total number of students that are graduating? 8,000?
There is 800 students graduating. They're putting five high schools together.
800 and they want 1,000 for security. Okay, so how many seats would have been available for family and friends of graduates, Taylor?
We were told that the Expo Center here seats over 7,000.
And they wanted to take away 1,000 of the seats for security?
Yes.
Is the reason that you started the petition because of Michelle Obama's politics or because you just don't want to lose seats? What is it, a combination or what?
Okay, you know, I'm really glad that she's coming here. It's the fact that the board is waiting for confirmation about, you know, the Obamas coming. They want to be president first. They were waiting for confirmation in January. And the fact that they didn't have a plan for this by now is what really upsets me. And then the way they're executing this, they told us exactly a month before graduation that everything's changing. And, you know, we are, you know, we have to choose what family is going to come just because Yeah.
Right, and this is a very big day in your life. Taylor, you're 18 years old. You started the online petition Thursday evening to urge the district to reconsider its plans, and you're saying it's not that you're against Michelle Obama. It's because you want your family and friends to be able to attend. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
And you also said people think it's a great opportunity, but it's the graduates' time. They are getting that diploma that they worked so hard for. Don't you also think that it's odd that she would try to use a high school graduation for a political speech?
Yeah, I mean, considering that Topeka is also the place where this happened, and we have our own museum for it, Brown v. Board, I mean, it's pretty awesome that she's coming to speak to us. But, you know, I don't think that speech necessarily...
Taylor, what percentage of the student population is minority in this graduating class?
I'm not sure. I go to Topeka High School, and it is the most diverse school in the city.
All right, so it's not about all white kids saying we don't want a black first lady. Let's be clear about that, correct?
No, it's not.
Okay, because there's probably a very large minority population in the graduation class. So it's about her trying to, let us say, overshadow the graduates. I'm amazed that you called the show out of the blue, and I tell you, you got a lot of nerve, Taylor. And I really hope that the authorities don't see you as anything but caring about your fellow graduates, because it's not about Michelle Obama. Taylor Gifford, thanks for calling the Savage Nation and making radio history right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now.
855-400-7282 is the Savage Nation. There are many topics. This is sort of the end of Holy Week. Easter, Passover came to a conclusion yesterday for the Christian people with Sunday's services, Easter Sunday, when, as you well know, if you're a Christian, what that means. And I asked myself, do Easter and Passover still have the same meaning to you as it did when you were younger? I don't mean as a child. Children are different. And do you think your children will follow the same holidays as you when they're older? I don't. As religions adapt to society, technology, and the times, where do you think the line will be drawn? Do you think religion can survive the new technology? I don't. Now, it's certainly surviving it in the primitive cultures that you find in Africa and regions where there is no internet and where there is no modernism whatsoever. They're living in another century, the 9th century. Muslims continue to slaughter Christian girls and rape them and impregnate them, and the world does nothing. The world yawns. Obama says nothing. Obama yawns. Kerry says nothing about the rape and mutilation of Christian girls in Africa. But aside from these throwbacks living in the 9th century, let's talk about in America, in this country, in these times, Easter, Passover. Does Easter still have the same meaning to you as it did? I don't know, even years ago. Forget when you were a child. I personally think holidays are for children. I kind of like them. I don't feel the shot anymore. I don't get I get nothing out of them. Nothing. No, I mean, I'm telling you the truth, nothing. I just feel anything. And I don't think children in 10 or 20 years are going to follow any of these holidays. Now, many of you will disagree with me and you say that your children will follow it. I hope you're right. I really hope you're right. How about Pelosi washing the feet of illegal aliens? I would thought that was one of the most demented, disgusting abuses of the name of Jesus in my entire life. The woman has no shame. The woman has no shame. I never saw anything like this in my life. In fact, the illegal alien child whose feet were being washed by Pelosi looked at her like she was insane, saying, wait a minute, I'm an illegal alien and one of the richest women in the world is washing my feet? What's this about? It certainly can't be because she cares about my feet. I mean, that was really something. I hear Obama wants clemency for thousands of drug offenders. Thousands and thousands will be released from prison under Obama's drug offender clemency deal. I can ask you if you agree or disagree. I mean, on the face of it, we have too many people imprisoned for minor drug offenses. But I'm afraid, given Obama and Holder's track record, that this is a kind of a mask designed to release some serious drug offenders rather than the innocent ones. I mean, that's what it looks like to me. Something's wrong with this picture. Why are they suddenly talking about clemency for drug offenders? It's an interesting question, really. And then there's that issue of telling the Jews in the Ukraine to sign up and pay a tax or leave, which is a shocking story. And they're trying to blame the Russians. I'm not jumping to the conclusion that that is the truth, by the way. Ukraine's Jewish residents are looking to flee to Israel. And a Holocaust survivor has warned nothing has changed since Nazis occupied the country. And that's because Jews are being picked on again in Ukraine. But the fact of the matter is it was occurring before the Russian, let us say, invasion, and they're not invading yet. The fact of the matter is the Ukrainians were some of the most vicious anti-Semites in the last century, and you shouldn't forget that. Now suddenly they're the good guys. Now they're girls in tight pants with I can't say blackberries anymore. Tahrir Square is gone. They're young girls in tight pants with iPhones in their rear pocket. Jews urged to flee Ukraine by Holocaust survivor. He said, because anti-Semitic leaflets were handed out in the country. And you should know that some of the most horrendous anti-Jewish atrocities were carried out by Ukrainians on the Nazi occupation during the Second World War. And there's a huge streak of, intolerance. Intolerance is one thing. Persecution is another thing. And outright murder, torture, etc., is another thing. And the fact is that these declarations made against Jewish and other minorities, mainly the Jews right now, is being blamed on the Russians, and the Russians say it is not them. They say that it's being done by the Ukrainian right wing, but you wouldn't know that listening to John Kerry. I think that's a very big story in its own way, because we don't know who is putting out the anti-Semitic leaflets. It's easy to blame Russia. I mean, that'll excite the people. Now, I don't want to go back to Harry Reid and his tie into the ranch, the Bundy Ranch, but there has been research done on what's underneath the grass that is allegedly at stake. It's not about grazing. It's not about cattle. It's about the land itself. And for Reid to have called Americans violent terrorists when he stumbled on it, said violent tourists at one point. He got a little mixed up. He called them violent tourists. I think he meant violent tortoises. I think he meant to say that they were violent tortoises armed with AK-47 pea shooters. Anyway, what am I going to say? The Democrat Party would be finished if we had a Republican Party that mattered. But I'm making a prediction here and now, which I told you last week. The Republicans will shoot themselves in the foot and they're liable to lose again anyway. They're going to run milquetoast Republicans. They're going to run non-conservative politicians. They're going to run Chamber of Commerce Republicans, check pants Republicans, country club Republicans, and the conservative base will not come out and vote for them. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz is liable to be right, that the Democrats are liable to hold on to their terrible, terrible tenure here. But the big story to you, I know what it is. It's the drug thing. Holder and Obama want to make more convicts eligible for clemency. There's only one reason for this. There's only one reason for this. And it's not to do with fairness. It has nothing to do with fairness. There can't be that many that are going to be released that it'll make a difference in elections. You can say, well, the obvious thing is they just want more Democrats. That's an obvious. But there aren't enough of them to swing an election. So what's the real reason that Obama wants to make more convicts eligible for clemency, for drug offenders? And do you agree or disagree with it? I mean, on the face of it, we have far too many people in prison. Let me be very clear. I've said it before. We have more prisoners per capita and proportional to our population than any country on earth, which is a damn shame. And it's a result of distorted sentencing guidelines. There's no question about that. And I don't mind people being released if they're put in jail for, let's say, smoking a joint. I mean, that's ridiculous. But the question is, who is he going to release? And how many will get out under the guise of being, let us say, innocent, more or less innocent? That's what I'm concerned about. 855-400-7282, Savage Nation. Other topics out there. Couple married 70 years, dies hours apart. I saw that story over the weekend. It really touched me. I don't know anyone married like that anymore today. There are some. This is a beautiful story. It shows Helen and Kenneth Felemly, who met as teenagers in Ohio, married for 17 years. They died 15 hours apart. So that's very touching. Helen died at age 92. Her husband, Kenneth, 91, passed away the next day. We knew when one went, the other was going to go. We wanted them to go together, and they did. You see pictures of them as teenagers, raising eight children. She was a simple woman, a homemaker. He was a railroad worker and later a mail carrier. But the reason they lived so long and stayed together, they were active in the Methodist Church where they taught Sunday school. You know, and all you wise guys, get back to me when you're 91. Tell me how your life is. It's pretty amazing to me. After 70 years of marriage, they still ate breakfast every morning holding hands. The couple never slept apart until about 3 years ago due to a medical issue. There's no jokes here. Kenneth passed away with his family by his bedside after saying, "Mom's dead." Oh, boy. The couple had 23 grandchildren and 43 great-grandchildren. It's an interesting story. I mean, it's part of an America that's gone. Helen and Kenneth Flemley met in Ohio when they were teenagers and married for 70 years, died 15 hours apart. How do you explain that? I don't know how you explain a thing like that, especially in an age where you have sluts showing their behinds on Instagram. That's what a boy is supposed to look at, a fat slob with a behind in the air. I never saw anything like a country that we're living in, that actors like Sean Penn or Alec Baldwin have daughters. They don't tell them, you know, there's shame in that. What are you posing with your leotards with your butt showing to the world? I didn't raise you to be that. Maybe they did raise them to be that way. That's where the fathers are that way. I mean, there's no father around. The father may as well be born in a test tube with a father like that. What kind of father tells a daughter, oh, yeah, go do a thing like that? Whatever. I mean, there's another topic out there. I don't know what you want to talk about. My horoscope, the front page of the New York Times. I actually spent the money on it for the show. Here we go again. They show a skinny girl with long hair in front of a shanty in West Virginia. 50 years later, hardship hits back. Here we go again. Caught in poverty. Appalachia's burden. That's my problem again. They show a girl living outside a shanty playing with a dog with a shanty and a swing set. Looks like Marin County. It looks like Western Marin to me, by the way. Doesn't look much different. It really doesn't look any different than Fairfax. If you drive in the hills, it looks about the same. I don't know what they're crying about. They got a dish on the ceiling. They got food stamps. I know that. And then there's a boy at home, John, was supposed to worry, but he's 30 years old and he doesn't work. He's on disability payments for his drug addiction. You hear this? Lives on disability payments. Can you imagine that they give disability payments to drug dealers, drug addicts in our country? I never, in my life, I wouldn't believe it. They were not invented for this, developed for this. But that doesn't stop the Old York Times from going on and on with the liberal homilies. Here we go. McDowell County, the poorest in West Virginia, has been emblematic of an entrenched American poverty for more than a half century. Entrenched American poverty. See, we're supposed to worry about poverty in America again all of a sudden. All of a sudden, entrenched poverty is my problem. And then they go back to John F. Kennedy. He promised to create the executive order, created food stamps. And when President LBJ declared unconditional war on poverty, it was the squalor of Appalachia he had in mind. Nothing's changed. After trillions of dollars, they're still in poverty. How do you explain that? Figure that one out. How do you explain that after 50, 60 years of government handouts, they're still in poverty? How is that possible? Could it be the people themselves and their culture? Must you always blame it on somebody else? I was born poor, and I was told as a child, if you want to make something of yourself, you're going to have to work your behind off, and you're going to have to make it on your own because I can't give it to you. So I decided. Then I was in high school. I had principals who would encourage us to work. We had a principal who would quote Shakespeare. He was an ex-pugilist. He was a tough guy, this principal. And I'll never forget hearing this. I was dozing off in assembly. I couldn't, you know, like every other kid who cared what they were speaking about and didn't listen to it. And they give a speech, and some words come through to you no matter where your head's at. That's how you learn. You're supposed to be bored by speeches. That's normal. You're supposed to tune out. You're supposed to zone out because it's all boring. But occasionally words will come through to you which have meaning to you, and they may have a change upon your life. Well, here are the words I heard in my high school. Some men are born great, some men achieve greatness, and some men have greatness foisted upon them. Those words resonated with me. I knew I wasn't born great. I knew that I would never have greatness foisted upon me. So I knew that if I wanted to achieve anything, along the road of greatness, I'd have to do it myself. So I've been working every day of my life ever since I've been a kid to achieve something. No one gave it to me. Some men are born great. What does that mean? That's the old system. That's the old system, or let us say the father is a billionaire and the son is reasonably intelligent and he gives the son the empire. Then the son is a great man until he proves otherwise. For example, Soros, the money changer in the temple, has a dumb son. A moron. You look at the kid, you know he's a dummy. You know that if he didn't have the father's money, he'd be working... I don't want to denigrate anyone who has a menial job. Don't get me wrong. But whatever. Pick your most menial job. That's the son. The son of Soros. But yet he's a great man because he has all the money and people kiss his ring. So if he has greatness now, we don't know where this will end up. After daddy dies and there's no longer any advice. And then others, you know, have greatness foisted upon them. For example, Obama has had greatness foisted upon him. He was cast into the role of the presidency by forces well beyond our imagination. Forces well beyond their imagination rigged the whole system, greased the skids, took an unknown lazy senator and virtually made him into president by rigging the election and running a schmoo against him, picking a schmoo to run against him. That's how that happened. And they threw the election for this guy. Well, the rest is history. Be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
I told them that I didn't. I knew I didn't want to be a nun, although we loved the nuns, and I spent a lot of time with nuns as I was growing up, a lot of time with the nuns. But I didn't think about being a congresswoman, but I didn't have any interest in running for political office.
No, I was wondering. Pelosi said her mom wanted her to be a nun, and I just wonder, would the world be a better place had she become a nun, or could she have done more damage to the Catholic Church than she's done to the body politic? These questions are very intriguing when you think about them. So we're talking about Obama suddenly announces he wants to release, free the prisons like the Bastille of drug offenders. Now you say, on the face of it, okay, there's too many people in prison to begin with. How many of them are there on small minor drug charges? But it's a question of why. There can't be that many to, you know, alter elections. There's always a nefarious reason when Obama and Holder do something. It's never straight up. And you can't call me on it. Because there's nothing that you could say that we're not going to say already. So I'm looking at a crazy story now. Man drowns in swan attack. Wife files wrongful death lawsuit. What, is she going to sue the swan? No. The wife of a man who was attacked by a swan and died is now filing a wrongful death lawsuit. According to WGN-TV, Anthony Hensley was responsible for two swans in an Illinois condo complex. They were used to keep away geese. Did you know that swans and geese didn't get along? To me, a swan and a goose is the same thing. I'm not that into ornithology. Crips and the Bloods, Eric said. The swans and the geese. The Democrats and the Republicans. The Tories and the anti-Tories. Pasta and antipasta. The report states Hensley drowned 2 years ago when one of the swans knocked him off his kayak and attacked him as he tried to swim to shore. Hensley's wife is now suing her husband's employer and the condo complex. She said they should have known swans are territorial and attack. Oh, God. Where'd she get this lawyer from? Had to be Columbia or NYU. A swan knocked him into the water and then attacked him? Well, all right, there are. I mean, geese are very big. You know, they use geese as attack animals in Germany. But they, I learned that geese are used as watch animals on properties. A goose can attack you. And if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. That's what I always say.
Savage.